אוקיי.
לעילוי נשמת אביבה בת מקדלנה.
Yes, a Holocaust survivor who was a dancer, professional ballerina, went to Israel, did her rotation as a nurse, and she started learning about the body and the movement, and she created a method called Aviva method to help naturally a woman become pregnant just naturally. With the movement of their body, and there's
Do you know this method? You can teach it here.
My sister-in-law knows it.
She's getting letters every year from many, many women from all over the
saying
world.
Thank you because they become pregnant.
Wow.
So, it's actually works, yeah.
Yes.
Wow, that's amazing.
It's like some sort of yoga. It's amazing. I tried it. And it's amazing.
Chazak, okay?
So, Sasa Megdalna.
Okay.
Rabbi, water, juice, before?
It's all good. So, being that it's Hanukkah, I want to open up by pointing out something that's difficult to understand of how we in the Chabad world light the menorah. I know that this topic is a great topic for people that are Chabad people. People that are not Chabad people, okay, so there's Akasha.
We're all Chabad here.
Okay, so bear with me because we can frame the whole class as a very important way of us learning how not to forget. It's a path. It doesn't mean it's easy, but you'll have a very, very important insight of why is it that some things we don't forget and almost all other things, most of us, forget. So it's almost like it's not a tip, it's a very deep insight of how we could substantially improve our memory. Okay. But let me begin with my question and then I'll share a story. There are certain mitzvahs in the Torah that have a component to it that's called Pirsumei Nisa. Pirsumei Nisa means is that, you know, we do what we do. We do what we do because Hashem wants. But there are certain things that we prefer for it to be done in a way, dafka, where other people will see what we are doing, for the message of what we are doing, for that message to be spread out, for it to become more mifursam, more known. One such example is the mitzvah of Chanukah. The fact that halachically, we're supposed to light the menorah in a way where more people, not less people, see us lighting the menorah, that manifests in the basic rules of the menorah, quoting the words that where should one light the menorah? Here are the words of our sages, al Pesach, Beisoy Mibachutz. Which means that you should light it outside the door of your house, similarly to a mezuzah. When we put up a mezuzah, I know that we have to put up mezuzahs by all of our doorways, but the doorways that connect the outside to the inside, where do we put up the mezuzah? Not inside the house, outside the house. Not only outside the house, but you know, these doorways are, you know, modern buildings, but in the old buildings where the walls could have been very thick. So sometimes you can have a doorway where there's a foot of depth. You know, most of us like being symmetrical, like it looks better. You would put it in the middle, no? The doorway that's in between the outside and the inside, we're supposed to put up the mezuzah on the outermost part of the doorway. In other words, it should be as close as possible to the public domain. Why? For everyone in the street to see that here lives a Jew. It's about, just end up, I want to go away from mezuzah. There are other parts to the mezuzah, but let me go back to the menorah. The correct way of lighting the menorah is outside the home. The Gemara says that since ubishas hasakana, there are times where it was dangerous for people to practice Judaism, right? We call that religious persecution. Sadly, we're familiar with this. When there's religious, and the religious persecution that the Gemara was referring to, ironically, was that in Iran, in Paras, in the times of the Talmud, the dominant religion was not the Islam, that was not even in the world yet. The dominant religion was a religion that was connected to sun worshippers, fire worshippers, they go together, and they would celebrate their holiday, what is now at the end of the Goyish year, which is more or less, even though we're talking about a Christian calendar, they had a different calendar, the Persians. But it turned out to be at the end of the what we call today the civil year, they celebrated around a month of festivities honoring their idol sun god. And their celebration was through lighting fires. The reason why the Goyim have Christmas lights is because even though Christmas is Avodah Zarah by itself, don't worry, they qualify it. They are Oivdei Avodah Zarah for which a Jew must die and not convert to Christianity. Yaharik Va'al Yavod, they added whenever, like real darkness attracts real darkness, so they connected to Christianity, real Avodah Zarah, and that included lighting candles, lighting fire to, so to say, what they called the god of fire, to the fire god. That's the candles in the... But there was another old idol worship of worshiping a tree. The Torah speaks, it's called an Asherah. A Christmas tree, even though I normally don't say the world, is a combination of three Avodah Zarahs, the Trinity. Like, it can't get worse. The Avodah Zarah of making God into more than one, that's the core of their belief, together with a tree, worshiping a tree as an idol, together with the lights that they put on the tree. Now that lights created for Jews a big problem, because they were, what they said, the Goyim, is that all of the fires that are lit during that time can only be lit in l'shem the sun, l'shem the fire god. Hanukkah is celebrated. Now we came before them. We have Yiddishkeit. But we went out of Israel and we moved into Persia. I have no idea why we moved into Persia, but that's life. That's what happened to Jewish history. We were there because Babel took us. And then what happened was is that they won over Cyrus. He conquered the Babel, and the headquarters became Paras, became Shushan. So we were there. We were there in Paras. We were there for 2,500 years plus. And Jews were not, no one was allowed to light fire unless you're lighting it for their god. And they made a rule that if you light a fire, not l'shem their avodah zarah, achas dosei lohamis, this is a capital sin. So even though the menorah needed to be lit outside, we're not allowed to light it outside. We were saying we're lighting it because we're celebrating the holiday to remember the natives of the Beis HaMikdash. This was violating, imagine, this was like murder. This was like, who knows what the goyim, I don't know, for murder you don't get killed in America, I take it back. This is like stealing taxes. I think that's definitely a much graver sin. I don't know what other aveda. This is like being a racist. Achas dosei lohamis. For that you're going to get killed. So we brought the menorah into the house. In other words, Hanukkah from the beginning was set up in a way where you should really light it outdoors. B'shas ha'sakana, you can put it on your table and it's good enough. That's the origin. Now look at the irony. On one hand, the Lubavitcher Rebbe has all the credit of introducing something that I witnessed the pushback of, making public menorah lightings. The Rebbe was the one that brought, before the Rebbe, no one did it. And now we see the power that it has. It's unbelievable that every single Jew is connected to Hanukkah because of the Rebbe's menorah campaign. It means even people, first of all, many Jews are connected to Hanukkah. It's unbelievable. The most celebrated mitzvah, believe it or not, is a bris milah still. The one that makes the least sense, mutilation. It shows you a Jew, the least logical one. After that, there is a machlokes right now, you know, the Pew and all these people, that is it a Seder or is it Hanukkah?
A Seder?
Pesach, the most celebrated holiday amongst the Jewish people. The most celebrated mitzvah is Bris Milah. What's the most celebrated? Either Seder. Doesn't mean that they keep Pesach yet, but they make a Seder or Chanukah. It's gewaldic. And so the menorah, the public menorah lightings is unbelievable. So we make public menorah lightings, but there's a question. I know this question I said is limited for us. Other people don't care that much, but that's on them. I do care. Why is it that Lubavitch, where do you light the menorah in your home? Ask inside.
And
ask
by the window.
It's like any Frumma Jew, they light the menorah by the window. And by the way, by the window, that's because we were, you know, we didn't have the money. You put it outside, it'll get blown out. Go to Yerushalayim in HaKodesh. Go to Omer. Even here, where did they light the menorah outdoors? They have these boxes. Beautiful. The whole, in other words, a Frumma Jew, when you learn, menorah has in it an element of Pirsuma Nisa. In other words, I don't just do it for me. I'm doing this for people to know that I'm lighting the menorah. It should have been that amongst all of the observant Jews, Lubavitch, or in California, we're called Chabad, we should be the ones that we light the menorah outside or by the window. Like you have a window, light it by the window. We do not light it by the window. We light it opposite the mezuzah. How do you explain that? What logic is there? Or anit is saying perfect. It fits. It fit. Doesn't make sense.
What?
People say, I'm saying this almost cynically, that we always figure out how to do everything different. So everyone does it this, we do it like this.
It's not the way, it's the altar of it.
No, I would say like this. I was just going to say that in the times of the Tsar, you could argue it wasn't safe for Jews to be observant. In other words, during Galus, this is not Lubavitch. This is all the European Jews. If you go back 100 years, no one lit it by the window. So people were afraid. People didn't want to be seen. People didn't keep the mezuzahs the way we keep it. People didn't walk around dressed the way we're dressed. I'm saying here we came to America and everything is a free country. And Dafka, go with your hat. That has nothing to do with anything, but Dafka, everyone, like, I am Jewish. That's what we're doing the whole time. So light the menorah at the windowsill. I know that people put decor. You'll see that everyone puts decorations because people want to show I'm Jewish. That's nice, but why didn't you do it the way it should be? Put the menorah on the windowsill. Okay. So I want to address this question. And as a perhaps, connecting it to something that I'm learning this week, connected to a beautiful maimon of the Alter Rebbe, I want to share a story that I just read. I shared at Shabbos 2 weeks ago. I heard it when I was a kid, and it's a very powerful story, and it got me thinking, and I want to just share that story. If you heard it, you can hear the story again. The Maggid of Mezrich had a limited group of students. Limited doesn't mean two. He had 120 Talmidim, and they were giants. They were tzaddikim, and that's life. Tzaddikim, no one is secured. No one should think that if I'm righteous today, I'll be righteous tomorrow. That's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. That's Jewish history. That's us and our lives. I'm sure most of us can look back and say, in that year, in a certain area, I was better. There's ups and there's downs. And sometimes the downs are horrible, and everyone is susceptible to a down, including tzaddikim. The Magen of Mezrich had a student who was a friend of the Alter Rebbe. They had a lot in common. His name was Volpe. And Volpe became an alcoholic. And whoever is not Lubavitch listening says, of course. Are you kidding? You guys drink the whole time. Yeah. He became a shikir, but not a functioning alcoholic. He became a shikir in which he lost his family and he lost his livelihood. And today he would have become homeless. And the way it worked then, homeless, is that you became a beggar. And it wasn't just like Jewish beggars, they survived. You went from village to village, you knew where to go. They would all sleep in the shul. That was the way it worked. Homeless meant you slept in the shul, so you had a roof over your head, but it's horrible. But for a person who only thinks about the next drink of next drug, I mean, we see this, we witness this, it's a tragedy. And this Volpe, from being the great Volpe, he became an alcoholic, and at some point, people lost touch with him. And there was this heartache that this group of tzaddikim had. Talmidei HaMagid knew that one of us is somewhere homeless. What do you do with that? And we all know, we by the way, here in LA, there were a couple of Jewish homeless people that were Frumah people. I know this is a whole process. I know for most of us, myself included, your heart breaks, you do what you could. We're not equipped to help them. It takes you just a long time to realize that. And you go and you help them and it doesn't work. And you help them and it doesn't work. And you help them and it doesn't work. And most of us, at some point, we just give up. We give up. I'm not saying it's the right thing. Just, you know, what you're doing is not helping. He was disconnected. But then there was this thing, Volpe. Where is Volpe? Where is Volpe? That was the shmuz. People had it in their minds. And every now and then, when they would meet an alcoholic or a homeless guy in the street, the Talmidei HaMagid would think, maybe that's him. That's how the mind works. If you have a family member, God forbid, that's an alcoholic, that's a homeless, every time you see a homeless, you wonder, you don't know where they are. One of the Talmidei HaMagid, Rav Baruch Ber of Babroisk, his famous cities, I don't know where, in Ukraine or who knows where, right? It sounds to the Sfardim all the same. Babroisk. Baruch Ber was a Baruch Mordechai. Baruch Mordechai Babroisk. Slicha. Baruch Ber was a big misnagdish Rosh Yeshiva. Rav Baruch Mordechai. He gets a knock, stam on a Wednesday, and a knock on a door, a beggar, starving. He walks into the house. This rabbi had a sixth sense. He says, this is Volpe. Like, he cannot explain. He knew it. He knew it even though he didn't know it. So he got very excited. First of all, he's giving him a meal. He walked in with a little knapsack. That means all of his physical belongings was in there, hoping that there's still a talis and tefillin, few things. But he decided that a guy like Volpe, who as a youngster was such a giant, he must have with him some writings that he wrote down teachings of the Rebbe, of the Maggid. And that's like finding gold. For Hasidim, you won the lottery, you have a new manuscript from the Maggid. He needed to relieve himself, this beggar. And everyone had outhouses. So he told him where to go. The moment the guy left the house, the host, the big rabbi, went into his knapsack and he began to look for the potential of there being something written by this beggar, some great Torah. And Volpe, as drunk as he was, had a sixth sense also. He knew what he knew. He knew that my host is onto me. He got very uncomfortable. He walked right back into the house and he catches the host going through his stuff. And he right away gave it. He says, you ganef. He didn't say all rabbis are ganovim. That they would say today. He said, you ganef. He says, yeah, you're the host and I'm the beggar. He said, how dare you go through my things? And what do you do then? You get caught red-handed. Just on the side, there's a beautiful Jewish anecdote. It's a made-up story. It's a great story.
You're leaving us in suspense, Rabbi.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what I want to go. That there was, the best way for Ganovim, not that you should use it, the way Ganovim would break into homes was through the chimney. Because you can put locks on your windows and on your doors, but most people won't go down the chimney. You'll get very dirty. But for Ganovim, it's perfect. You can push yourself down. You can push it. A chimney was like the big, for amateurs, that was the way to get into a house. So there was a village Ganov. And every day he went into the chimney. He picked the house of the rabbi. That rabbi learned at night. They found a rabbi like that. So he goes 3 in the morning. And the rabbi was sitting and learning in his office. So when he goes through the chimney, he gets all darkened. And he comes in. He comes into the office. And the rabbi picks up his eyes. And he tells him, what are you doing here? Like, what do you do? So the story is the guy says, Rebbe, I have a question. I have a shaila. So he says, you know, what's the shaila? He says, Rebbe, how do I get out of this? That was his shaila. Vi krichmen for them arois. So that sometimes you get caught red-handed. And the question is, how do I get out of this? So he got caught red-handed, so I didn't get out of it. So he decided, and this is in life, you get caught red-handed, the emes. The only way, not that you'll get away easy, but the only way is the emes. So he tells him that you are Volpe, and we all miss you, and we all know that you might have some writings of the Maggid, and I couldn't help myself, I'm looking for the writings of the Maggid. He thought, yeah, he was honest. Sometimes you think you're honest, you're going to be embraced. Ooh, did he give it to him? And he tells him, you see, he says that you are not like us. You, the younger generation of Hasidim, you're not like us. You're not like us. And then he gave an intro. He says that it's not uncommon for people when they get older to start forgetting things. So what do? They begin writing everything down. Like today, my car keys I put on that table, my glasses, I left the guys to laugh because we're laughing at ourselves. You write down. And then you know that you have to do certain things today. So many people, they write to-do lists. Gotta do this, gotta do it. Like, why do you have to write it down? Because you'll forget. I'm here, this is there. He says, there's one thing that no one writes on that list. You'll never write where you are. I am here. No, because you can't forget. You're here. You don't have to write, I am here. It's not forgettable. He says that it used to be that a chassid and the Rebbe and chassidus are one. Can't forget chassidus. He says, we never wrote down the teachings of chassidus. It became us. And he says, that's your problem. He says that there's the you, and then there's that which you learn. And he was angry, and he picked up his stuff, and he left the house. And that's the last we heard from Valpa. And that's such a good statement. And that's a truth that hurts. That, yeah, when I learned math, not that I learned math, my father's not happy about that. My father was the best math guy in Brazil. Just don't know, I give him credit. Male, not female. There was one woman that was better than him. My father went to public school. Because my Zayda, whose yard site was 2 days ago, when he moved as a shliach there was a Talmud Torah, and people that were moving from Europe in the 30s, when they came to Brazil, it took them very short to stop keeping religion. So it began, classmates, Shomer Shabbos. So a half a year into it, they stopped keeping Shabbos, they stopped keeping kosher. He didn't want for my father to see a Jew keeping Shabbos, not keeping Shabbos. So what was his solution? Goyim. Machaya, that was his goal. He moved to a neighborhood where there are no Jews. He sent my father and uncle to a public school. So they know they're Jews and they're Goyim. You eat reif because you're a Goy. That was his logic. So he was part of the public school system. In Brazil, once a year, you take a math exam. And at the end of elementary, they put the national score. He won the biggest of men. And there was a woman that got one thing higher than him in his whole life. He was anguished that he didn't get the top.
And I wish, I'm
telling you, not it didn't go to me. I don't see it in my kids, maybe the grandkids. No, the math that my father had was extraordinary, that when he would sell his schoira, you know, the fractions, like if you have the sum total is 32,000, not dollars, Brazilian monopoly money, 50 cents, and the guy wants a 15% discount, he would know right away what that is. Before the guy can punch in the calculator, he knew, and he says, I went to yeshiva, I know math. He says, you went to college. He would always make fun of all of the Jewish people. He says, I went in yeshiva, you learn it properly. And not a word of math you learned in yeshiva, but coming back over here. So how did I get all fakrochem with my math? Well, I'm saying when you learn something, it doesn't have to become you. You have information. You have information, and which is great. And if you don't have a photographic memory, and God did not make most of us with photographic memories, it's not the end of the world to forget, so you forgot. But what should have been, what should be, is that the certain things that you learn, you should never forget. There are certain things that it was meant that when we learn it, it becomes who we are. And included in that category, and the ikir of this category has to be Torah. It has to be who we are. You know, when we have a tradition that when a child, a boy or a girl, when they are being formed in the womb of their mother, that a malach teaches that child the entire Torah. And when they're born, a malach hits the child over the mouth and the child forgets. So what's the point of the exercise? And the answer is that when you hear Torah, how would you know whether the Torah is true or not? If when you hear it, you knew it, it's true. By Torah, when you hear something, if it's Torah from God, you never knew the words. You know it's emes. You cannot fake Torah because you knew it already and a part of you did not forget it. An outer part of you forgot it. So you have to go get it back. But when you get it back, you know, in English, the word is it resonates. It's amazing. When you learn Torah, it's going to resonate. if it was taught properly. And if it doesn't resonate and you're sharp in that place, then the person made it up. He made a mistake. Greater people will know. When they listen, they know whether it's Torah or not. Because it has to match with something in. Because Torah is not forget a bull. And how do we get there? How do we get to that place? Yeah, what I'm sharing is only information, but I think it's correct information. But at least it gives a rational path of learning Torah in a different way. And again, this will all be connected to the Menorah, Dafke and Chabad. The Menorah is inside the house. So here we go. Here are the ideas. In Kabbalah, there is a term that's used that's called Chotem Hamit Hapech, a inverted seal. Seals. You know, again, Brazil, all third world countries, by you over there, whichever third world your country, everything is seals. Everything government is seals, big certificates. When a person gets smicha, in my days, you got a piece of note, the rabbi wrote that you're qualified. Today, it's this with the seal. The bigger the seal, the more ignorant, for sure. All of the diplomas, the seals, so there's a seal. With the wax, so we had, it's crazy how people are. In Brazil, when the president walks in, there's two people with trumpets and with flags. Like the more retarded the country, the more you have these things like, wow. So there's a seal. What's a seal? You have wax and you have a ring, a signet. So the phenomena is, this is just a mushel, is that if on the signet the image is protruding, it's going out, then when you seal it, it's going to be inverted. It's going to be indented. If on the seal the image is indented, then when you apply it to the wax, that image will be protruding. The truth is, a mirror is the same example. It's amazing. I don't know if you know. If you take anything with letters, put it in the mirror, what will you see? You will not be able to read it. Even though one reality reflects another reality, always. They're not random realities, right? So there's the outer reality, there's the inner reality, and they mirror each other. Mirroring each other doesn't mean that exactly what you see here, you see there, exactly inverted. And that's a crazy thought. So, you know, the simplest application of this is that I forgot the names right now. So that means my Torah is not learned properly. That there were two chachamim. There was a near-death experience recorded in the Gemara in which, if I'm not mistaken, a father asked a son who passed away and came back, you know, right away, near-death experience. And he asked him, my son, what did you see? It was a father and a son. Huh? Mavet Clinic. Yeah. Near death experience. Everything is a Rosh Tevis. NDE. And then they feel cool. NDE. Mamash. What did you see? So he says, Abba, Anira iti olam hafuch. Everything was upside down. And he said the people that here are nobodies. They're great. Says, all of the great people there are horrible people there. Everyone is the opposite. So his father responded to his son, that my son, you did not see an upside down world. He says, we're living in an upside down world. He says, you saw the world of Emes. That's the Gemara. So big is little is big. Huh? Very good. But it goes much deeper. I mean, that's a simplified understanding of it. The theme that Hasidus looks at a lot, including in the Maimer of Ayigash and this Parsha, is the mashal that God created the physical world in a way where there is a hierarchy in creation. To simplify it, we use the Rambam's classifications of everything is divided into four. Doimim, Tzemeach, Chai, Medaber. The lowest is parts of the world that are silent. Doimim, earth, water, they don't talk. They don't move. They don't grow. It is what it is. They're very fixed. It's called in English inanimate. It means there's no life. It appears that there's no life. Then you have vegetation life, right? Then you have animal life, and then you have human beings. Who's greater than whom? In this world, the master of the world, the way God made it, was the human being. Right? Uredu b'degas hayam bo'ef ha-shamayim, that God told us that we are the dominant. We're on top of the food chain, the goyim call it. Ironically, if we are so great and we are so smart and we are on the top, then who do we get life from? From that which is lower than us. From animals. And who do they get life from? From the vegetation. And who does vegetation get life from? From water. From minerals. Who's feeding whom? Who's greater? Who's the giver? Who's the recipient? Is it the greatest to be human? Is it the greatest to be earth? What's greater? So there is this paradox, there's contradiction, that on one hand, the human being is the greatest. On the other hand, there's something in the earth that a human being doesn't have. The earth gives life. The earth gives food. The earth gives sustenance. Hakol hayam min ha'aretz. Everything is from the earth, Mother Earth. Okay, so how is it so? Why is it so? Let me go one more example that Chassidus speaks about, and that is that within the human being, let's divide human into three parts. Adam, Chava, and the Nachash, in the mystical model. So Adam refers to our seichel. Our mind is our most evolved, sophisticated tool. You have your mind, you can think. Then we have underneath it, we have our emotions. We're talking about deep emotions. And then we have as our core, as our base, is what's called instinct. Right? It's not called an emotion, the instinct. Like when you're hungry, you have to eat. If someone is dangerous, you want to get out of here. Human instinct. Adam Chava Nachash. Who's supposed to rule whom? So the story in Kabbalah of the Garden of Eden is that the mind should be the one directing the feelings, which should be directing the instincts. What led to Golos is that the instinct, the Nachash, got the better of, directed the emotions, who then rationalized. So who was the leader? The Nachash became the leader, and that's what kicked us out of Gan Eden. It's true. And then there is the opposite truth, the choysam hamasapich. The opposite truth is that what part of the person has the most power in it? Your instinct. You can change the way you think with a lot of avoida, with God's help, to some degree, you can get some sort of handle over your emotions. But the instinct, how many people in human history can say what they were not hungry on Yom Kippur? Avraham Avinu. A few people, after they worked and worked and worked and worked and worked, they became like not weak, it's hard to relate to them. The instinct is my instinct. So there's a certain power, stubbornness, for good and bad, hardness, almost infinity, in the lowest part that we don't have in our highest part. And therefore, just as an example, where does this play out in Yiddishkeit? That in the Mishkan, so it was a structure in which Kohanim, representing all of us, they were the main actors there. They did the avoda. But the building itself had in it animal hide. The animal hide was the roof. And then you had over there as the walls, you had cedar wood vegetation. And the earth was the sand of the desert. So actually, physically even, what was higher was coming from a higher animal hide, vegetation, and the bottom earth. In the Beis HaMikdash, they reverted it. In the Beis HaMikdash, it needed to be made out of stones. And there were places where they placed wood dafka under the stones. They had an inverted seder. Because when you go to the secret, when you go to the inner, the lower is higher. we cannot jump there. If you go right away to the lower is higher, we're going to get crazy. We have to first live with where we're at. Where we're at is that seichel is greater than midas. I'm supposed to live my life based on my seichel. If I'm not going to use my seichel, I'm not doing my due diligence in serving God properly. Tell a person, follow your instinct. God forbid, tell your kid, follow your instinct. They'll get into a lot of trouble. But that's not the whole story. After a person gets organized enough, gets disciplined enough, in which they have the proper hierarchy, Adam Chava Nachash, you should know that there are times and places where the only part of you that's going to get you to the right path is your instinct. Right?
How do you know?
That's a big kasha. Don't look for the answer. But just to get that there is and there is. So you know, follow your gut. Listen to your gut. There's a lot of truth in it. The problem is only living there. Actually, in Yiddishkeit, primarily before Mashiach, listen to your mind. Be a person. Think. Think. And in the mind is the vehicle to right and wrong. The feelings, bechlal, don't have right and wrong. Bechlal, it's not shayach. You're speaking two different languages. The feeling feels. The mind is the place where the neshama can rest, and you can tell a mind, this is right and that's wrong. You reason with people that way, yeah.
But it can also rationalize in a bad way.
100%, 100%, 100%, 100%.
Yeah.
But don't forget that the seat of the neshama, we're speaking all relative to the other part, mm-hmm. External, is dafka in the moyach, in the mind, in the mind. What happens between pre and post bar bas mitzvah is not that much the feelings, it's that the mind becomes more independent. And that's a big advantage. If my mind becomes independent, so it becomes less subjugated to being manipulated by the feelings that will then have my mind rationalize, and I won't even admit that I'm rationalizing. But if I become more independent, then I can look at myself and say, I know what I want, I know what I feel, but let me first check in with God. Let me connect to something that's objective. Mm-hmm. And where will that be communicated to me? In the Moyach. Hashem made all human beings stand upright. One of the statements that made its way into Hayom Yom is to demonstrate that what separates man from beast is an animal has the head and the heart and the liver. Or let's go with the liver. The liver represents the instinct. Mystically. So it's all on the same alignment. Sometimes it's the kidneys, just to know. I think it's the kidneys actually, I think are in the back. So on the animal, so you know, it's all the same, the kidneys and Hashem made a human being that the mind physically is above the heart, which is above whether it's the liver or the kidneys, because the mind should be the one directing. Leading the way, so to say. And then you have a much deeper truth, that somehow there is within us the capacity to have an instinct that the mind cannot get. Like Ruach HaKodesh. Like you right away know, this is good and that's bad. But that's very, very deep. And if you are afraid that a mind can be manipulated and therefore rationalize the bad, I'll tell you that fear is on steroids if you take into account the instinct. That's where it gets very tricky. So I don't know what's what.
But Rabbi, isn't the instinct for MS, like people know when they do something wrong. People know what God and what not.
I fully agree with what you're saying. In other words, what, very good. I like that. What do I have within me to help me determine whether I'm rationalizing or whether it's just, it's my ego or whether it's the emes, my instinct. Like there is something within me cannot be tricked. Many people lose touch with that. But you're right. Yeah, exactly. Because deep, 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 deep. So let me show you where this expresses itself. What is more important, keeping commandments or learning Torah? Guys, learning Torah is with the mind. With the mind. Mitzvahs you keep with your body. That's this question. They debated what's greater. If you're living in the reality where the seichel is the most sophisticated part of the human experience, so what part of me should I use to connect to God? The greatest part of me, my mind. If I'm going to acknowledge that the least sophisticated part in me, the core, on one hand, it's not developed. We are like animals. On the other hand, it's the strongest. It never changes. Never can never get tricked. Eitan, Eson, that's what it is. Eson is koyach, old in a good way, old that it never changes. Then we should use that part in us to be in service of God. The Alter Rebbe says, that's Yosef, that's Yehuda. It's beautiful. Just there was a conflict. And in this week's parsha, Yosef was the king, and Yehuda needed, he engaged with him, but Yehuda needed to get close to Yosef. And Yehuda was subservient to him. In the future, Yehuda will be the king, his descendant. What's Yosef, what's Yehuda? Yosef is understanding, increasing. You see, the mind always gets bigger. You increase knowledge. Or decrease. It's a living thing. It's happening. The core, the instinct doesn't change. Represented by Yehuda. Yehuda represents bittul, acknowledgement that I don't know. It's bigger than me. I give myself to it. I don't own it. It owns me. That's Yehuda. You begin, Yosef has to be the king. At the end, Yehuda has to be the king. Va'avdi David malach aleihem. In the beginning, you want to build a house for God, made it out of animal hide. It's beautiful. There's something about the leather clothing. It's from animals. Dafke. Much greater than linen or vegetation. You're enclosing yourself in something greater. On the other hand, punkt verkehrt. You want to enclose yourself in the inanimate, which is some plastic, polyester, all of the new fancy clothing. I don't know how healthy it is. I don't know. I don't know what there must be a better alternative. You have leather and you have
vegan leather.
Vegan leather is made out of what?
Plastic.
What, plastic? I mean,
synthetic.
Yeah, because synthetic it might not be good because it's not natural. What natural doimim do people? I just came
linen,
to me.
Linen.
No. Linen is a plant.
Yeah.
I'm saying. In other words, there has to be something even lower.
Yeah, the rayon,
viscosa.
Yeah.
But what is that made out of?
Synthetic.
But synthetic is manipulated, doimim. Is there a natural, like leather is pure?
Gold?
Otazoi. Now you did it. Gold. Beautiful. That's it. Gold garments. And you should, not a joke, they made gold garments. That's great. They're doing a gold garment. A gold, that's it. It can be a silver garment. It can be a copper garment. But if you're the husband who's listening, don't get nervous. You can buy copper. So it's good for this. It's much cheaper. It used to be cheaper. Copper is a fortune, right? They steal now with the Ganevas. They steal copper. Anyways. Okay. So let me go back over here. Listen to these words. These are good words. Of Yosef Yehuda. Yosef Yehuda means the Alter Rebbe has a beautiful maimonim that we spoke about here. Halel Hoida'ah. What's the difference between them?
Halel is to praise and Hoida'ah is to think.
Halel, praising, is only possible if you understand that something great happened to you. Halel. So there's the normal life. There is something special that was done. If a person is not looking at that, for whatever reason, they won't praise. We're speaking about authentic praise. But if you noticed what happened, or even if I'm not paying attention, but God gave me something even greater, but if it's something that is close enough to me for me to be able to see, the response will be halal. Thank you. Thank you. Hoida'ah in Hasidus is not thank you. Moida ani is not thank you. I know that they like saying it's all these, but this hoida means complete acknowledgement that something happened to me and I don't know what it is. The realization that I'm clueless. That the realization that God is doing so many things for me. And I don't have the ability to know that. Because it's completely above my head. And how do I connect to something that's completely above me? What do you do? What do you do if you want to connect to something that's completely above you? How do you get there?
Think about it.
You have to give yourself over to it. That's called Haida'ah. Understanding is that something is being brought into me. Something is being brought into me. There's Chachma, and I brought it, Mamash, just like we eat. The Torah calls Torah Lechem, Mayim. Why? Just like you eat. Same thing. The eating is just in the lower body. You take a grape and you put it in you. You take wisdom and you put it in you. There are certain wisdoms that don't fit in here because the here is too little and the wisdom is too big. And the only way to connect to it is me going into it. Me going into it. That demands tremendous amount of bittul, of acknowledging that I don't know what's happening.
Which part of you is going into it?
All of me.
My emotions.
All of you. Very good. On that level, when you are utterly humbled, at that moment, you're not mind and you're not emotions. You're down to your core. And that will be, if you have to give a part, we'll call that the instinct.
Will it be the same as the essence?
Your essence. Just words, mamale and soiviv. Mamale is the level of godliness that is close enough for us to be able to get. To mamale, you say halal. Soiviv is when we realize that we don't really understand what's happening. And that puts us in a place of us being hoida'od to God. I acknowledge God that this is way bigger than me. And that allows me to go into it.
Is it surrender?
Complete surrender.
What happens?
The word surrender means what I described,
right,
and much more. Surrender means I want to connect. Okay, I want to connect. How do I connect? It's one or two ways. Either something goes into me, or I go into it. The more I understand something, the more I experience something. It went into me. Wow, now I became bigger. Oh, I feel shifted. I feel enlightened. Hoida, you won't have shifted and you won't have enlightened. But something bigger than you will go through you. When you are worthy, dafke, because of the level of your bittul, and that's the meaning of the bowing down when we say hoida. When you learn, your head is becoming elevated, not physically. You're having an increase. You can only see what happens when people learn. Like there's activity. There's something happening. When we're in the mode of Haida'a, nothing.
Would you say that in order for you, Haida'a is the second level after Bittul?
Haida'a is Bittul in this, generally the same in this context. I'm sure there's a difference because different words.
After you become empty, with bittul, then a hoda can come through you, from what I understood.
Probably correct.
I don't understand at all. I don't understand. So you're trying to connect to something. So you do it through.
So either you connect to it the way we were always taught to connect to it. Let's speak about an idea. Let's talk about it. But this applies to everything. So there is an idea, and you want to eat up the idea. Mm-hmm. I want to understand. Mm-hmm. If there is something that you accept, you cannot understand. What do you do now?
Surrender.
Yeah, the words are, so you completely surrender yourself to it. And its wisdom and its feelings will somehow work their way through you. When it comes to God, which is the ikar of everything, the goal would be to properly connect to God. The challenge of connecting to God is that I cannot understand God.
Or feel it.
Or anything. So, and the solution for that will be, is that Hashem in His kindness came close to me, but there are two levels. There is the level of where He's so close to me that we're calling that level the light of Memali. And that's a level of godliness that a little bit I could understand and a little bit I could feel, and I have my duty to do so. So a person can actually love God. How can you love something that you don't know? You cannot. But God we do know. How do we know God? We know Memale. These are the words. In other words, there's something about God that I know, and now that I know it, now that I love it.
So we do a mitzvah.
Before doing mitzvahs. When it comes to soivev, God remains removed from you. And then you have the frustration of, I want to know God, but God is unknowable. And the solution, there has to be a resolution. God did not make us to be frustrated. But when a person is frustrated and there is no way to know Him, it's going to lead a person, it's natural, to completely surrender to God.
And then you are connected
to Soivev.
And you know it, but you don't experience it.
And I would actually say that while you're connected, you probably don't even have an experience, but the imprint of that moment will never be forgotten from you. There was no...
Consciously,
later, not during. Can be. If you are aware of you during that experience, you're not having that experience. But after that experience, what happened when God gave us the Torah on Mount Sinai? The way Chazal, two things happened. There was wisdom that was transferred, memale, but that wasn't the ikir. That there was something that happened to us, that our experience was death. Mamish. So what was the point? Point was is that God brought us back to life. And the lingering effect of Sinai will never be forgotten from us.
It becomes an instinct.
And I would say that the closest part in us to that is the instinct.
So like kosher food, like seeing not kosher food and getting like disgusted.
That only came from a connection to Soiviv. Very good.
Right.
Something like that. So I want to come back over here to my story, and then I'll go back to Hanukkah. Let's go backwards. I think that when a person is learning Torah the way we learn Torah, which is the right way, where we're beginners, is that there is wisdom, God's wisdom, not human wisdom. I know it's God's wisdom, but it's God in wisdom, which is God's kindness, because I don't know God, but I can know wisdom. And I make an effort to learn, and I learned. When I got it, I can lose it. That's called forgetfulness. It's possible to lose it. Also, it doesn't become me. It becomes something that's in my mind. It doesn't become my bones. Why would it? It was wisdom. I got my wisdom. But when a person is not going on the path of halal, when you're going on the path of hoida'ah, which is not that sophisticated, the opposite, in which there has to be a simple, pure surrender to God and to godliness and to that which I know I cannot know, ironically, in that experience, whatever you will end up knowing, you will never forget. Listen to this. Think about your life. Think about moments where you needed to surrender. You'll never forget that moment. Sadly, for most people, is when something horrible was happening. They were so overwhelmed and they knew they can't stop it. This is sad. And that's why they can never forget it. And if it's a bad experience, until they learn how to see it differently, they're going to be traumatized for their whole lives. Like, why can't I just forget it, they say. Because you were in a state of hoida'ah when it happened. You were completely surrendered. And that which you connect to in the state of hoida'ah, you cannot forget.
Can there be a positive surrender?
The positive, I'll give you just a few mushels and then I'll come back to my menorah. I can say like this, that many of us knew Rabbi Meir Abuchatzer. We know him because we know his kids and because he lived, he came to shul a lot. When he got close to the Rebbe, he's Moroccan. He doesn't speak Yiddish. When the Rebbe would speak, they had a service then. They had these little white radios that had one wire, the most uncomfortable half headset, and they had an English translation, and they had a French translation, and they had a Hebrew. Three languages. So people who didn't understand Yiddish, if they wanted to follow what the Rebbe is saying, they would stick something in their ear and they would listen. He was there for a long time, didn't understand the word. He decided one time, you know what? It's time to understand. So he rented, or they gave it to you. The Rebbe took a look at him in the middle of his talk, and the Rebbe told him, take it out. Like, what are you doing? You're ruining the whole thing. Why? Because, see, Svardim Ashkenazim, by Ashkenazim, we're into understanding.
Yeah.
Mamale. Yeah. The Svardim, they're connecting to Soiviv. They're not...
They're just hard.
It's much more than feeling. It's a different way of being. No insult. They're as smart as anyone else. But they understand that when it comes to Hashem, when it comes to Yiddishkeit, it's not about understanding. And that, if you understand, you ruined it. You understood it, I got it, and then you forgot it. So that maybe just that's a poor. You have to find more examples of a certain attitude that we have when it comes to everything, primarily with Yiddishkeit. Do I want to be able to praise God? Do I want to be able to surrender to God? There's halal and there's chidah. The miracles that we know is halal. And we all know that the biggest miracles we don't know. We all know we don't know what they are. Like, what did God do to me today? No, I almost got into an accident and people feel so grateful. You know that must be happening a million times more than you think. And who knows? So my goal is not even to know. My goal is to be in awe of the fact that there's such a closeness of God to me, so close, so beyond, that my mind will never hop the greatness of God. That's a whole different path. So what do I do with that? Surrender. And in surrender, there's no rationale. There's no there's no seichel. There's no seichel. It's gone beyond seichel. Mesiras nefesh is going to be defined in this conversation. That means when Jews are ready for martyrdom, which halachically is limited, but whenever a Jew is acting on the level of mesiras nefesh, they're not rational. The story of Hanukkah was not rational. There was no seichel. Al pi halacha, questionable. Mamish, whether we were allowed to wage a war against the U.S. Marines when, by the laws of nature, you will lose the law. They were operating on a different realm. And the celebration of Hanukkah in this light is not celebrating, let's say, the exterior part of human experience, but this core, it's the deepest part, the least sophisticated, the pintaliyid, the esan hanashama. And therefore, in the Beis HaMikdash, the menorah was not lit outside, it was lit inside, in the Beis HaMikdash. In the Beis HaMikdash, there were many stuff that were happening outside that made Persuma Nisa. But anything that could be externalized is not something that's essence. You use the word essence. Essence cannot be externalized. We are emphasizing, in Lubavitch, I'm suggesting, that Chanukah is the celebration not of the part of Yiddishkeit that I can understand. It's celebrating the capacity that we have, even simple people, at moments to so surrender to God, which is the story, we so surrendered. But we don't celebrate the war. We celebrate the fact that there is the core of the Jew, which is able to surrender, that in there lies the deepest connection to God that never changes. Like, not forgetting means time has no effect. Time has no effect. That's the miracle of the lights, that time did not eat up the oil. It's not limited. It doesn't change. It's unchangeable. Unchangeable is something in, not something out. So if the emphasis is on the in, we don't put it on the window. On the other hand, we do. We make public menorah lightings. We do our Persuma Nisa. But when we do the mitzvah, we don't emphasize the Persuma Nisa part of it. Just one more example of that, and I have to go. How do you explain the logic that the Shabbos candles that are holy, not only am I allowed to use the candles, One of the reasons why we light candles is for you to have a lit up room. We don't want for it to be dark. We're lighting the candles for the benefit, of. Why is it that we don't have any right to use the light of the fire? So why are you lighting it? Exactly. Because if you're using the light, that's already, I'm getting it. I got it. I can read. I'm internalizing. It's crazy. When you internalize something, you might lose it. Not using the light, it's not here for me. I am here for it. I am in service of it. I am surrendering to it. I'm not using it. The moment you use it, you downgraded it. It becomes, now there is a place for Neder Shabbos. There's a place for learning Torah. Yosef HaTzadik was a Yosef HaTzadik. But Chanukah is already connected to some future Yehuda dominance, surrender dominance. It's a whole different way of being. A world in which, in that world, the instinct should rule the mind. In that world, the holy. We're not there yet. But we have to begin to tap into that. There has to be moments in which everything becomes inverted. Function. Already downgraded it. If something becomes functional, transactional, I get to use it, you ruin the essence.
So would that explain why we sit and watch the flame for 30 minutes?
And we don't do anything.
It's a reflection of our neshama.
I would even say we're surrendering to it. We're going into the flame. Yeah, you have to learn the Torah ways of doing these meditations, but that's what you're doing. Just to know, when you look at a flame, you're going into the flame. You're going into the flame.
Which represents Hashem?
Which is a mirroring of a certain divine power that will burn us. So normally, we run away from fire. Here we're going into the fire. Torah is, there's a part of Torah that's water. Just define. The water is something that we consume. The Torah is called Mayim. Torah is called Lechem. There's a part of Torah called fire. Eish oichla, and you should know like this, that human fire consumes, burns up. Godly fire doesn't burn up. So it allows for you to surrender to it and you'll be. That was the burning bush. That was even the fire of the Menorah. Didn't eat up the oil. It ate up, but it didn't eat up. Torah's fire. People are afraid of Torah because people are afraid of fire. People are afraid of, what they don't know is that this level of fire does not eat you up. You become its fuel. Now, the ego of you will be burnt up. Don't tell me what to do. Oh my God, I have to give up this. And yeah, you're going to have to, some parts of me will be burnt.
The karbanos
were burnt up. The outer has to get burnt up. The inner doesn't get burnt up. The Ner Hamaravi never went out. Ner Chanukah happened in the inner. Something about inner. It's an inner pnimi. It's a very pnimi. It's something that's very pnimi. It cannot be externalized. Now, none of this is a correct halachic explanation. But this is a more a inner explanation. There has to be also halachic explanations. Even though we fulfill the mitzvah, well, the question still stands, but this, I think, is a perhaps a way of looking at it. Well, pnimius, it cannot be, no one should see it.
Does that have to be connected to us? Or is that the way? Is that the way to connect to Silva? To Silva.
The way to connect to Silva is to surrender.
Through mitzvahs?
Ideally through mitzvahs. Well, let me also use the inner mitzvahs. So in the world of Mamali, very good. In the world of Amali, I will have questions that will not have answers. And any question I have on God, I'm not meant to be dumb, could create a barrier. I don't have an answer. And even if I have an answer, the fact that I had a question, that already puts a barrier. In the level of Soiviv, you know when we go, how do we go from Amali to Soiviv? Is that when I don't have answers. I'm stuck. I have to come to my limit. I don't naturally go to Soiviv. Scary. But have no answer. So what do? I surrender. When I surrender, I have no question. Soiviv doesn't give me an answer. Soiviv removes the question. And all of the knowledge that will come into me when I have no questions will be knowledges that I will never forget. And Chassidus is the inner part of the Torah. So the fact that when you learn Rambam, you learn Chitas, Chumash, when you learn that you can forget, yeah? His admonition to Rav Baruch Mordechai was, is that what's wrong with you? He says, that's Chassidus. The whole Chassidus is for you to stop learning the way you're learning other information. You're not learning God, like a big person, you're eating up God. I learned today. No, you're giving yourself over to God. You're surrendering to God. I would even argue that when the Magid or the Baal Shem Tov taught it, it's possible that most of the students purposefully did not understand. It was an experience. My mother has a Zayda way up there. It was a big Rav. He would say when he learned Mishnayos, he would learn a Mishnah, and he would say that the Mishnah is so holy that it makes no sense anymore to him. That means that he was looking to get beyond the...
Yeah, but I do that sometimes, and I feel like it could be a little...
Yes. Meaning, yes.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, you could be a little delusional.
No question about that.
You know what I mean? Like, if you read it blurry, like where you're kind of interpreting, it could be a little... How do you know that you're...
If you'll never forget it.
But the whole thing is that you don't remember... Isn't the whole point of Sova that you don't remember it and it's just an experience?
After the experience, you'll never forget it. If what you go with is... Maybe we never had a real set of experience yet. To use as a point of reference. Just hearing words. Okay, Chevra.